Good evening and welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I'm John Tanza in Washington. Here are some of the stories we are covering today, Tuesday, September 23rd, 2014. IGAD mediator calls on Juba and the rebels to stop fighting and talk the language of peace.
Whether this party or that party gains more ground of control on the ground, this would mean nothing, practically nothing, because the guns will not solve this political problem.
And tens of thousands of villages are displaced by flooding in Warab State.
All the crops that were cultivated this year is completely damaged by the flooding. They also reported waterborne diseases or affected all the victims.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. President Salva Kiir arrived in New York this past hour to attend the 69th United Nations General Assembly meeting. Every year, heads of states from around the world gather in New York to brief the UN General Assembly about progress and developments in their countries. President Kiir is expected to address the UN General Assembly on Saturday. South Sudan's warring parties are sitting down for another round of talks in Ethiopia, though the recent fighting is once again threatening to derail the process. VOA's Gabe Joslo has this story from Nairobi.
The latest round of talks began in Bahir Dar Monday, bringing together representatives of the government, the rebel opposition, and other parties to try to hash out a deal to end violence that has killed more than 10,000 people since December. Several previous rounds of talks mediated by the East African group IGAD have failed to reach an agreement, while every ceasefire deal signed between the two sides has been violated. Lead mediator Seyoum Mesfin told VOA the success of the current round depends on the will of both parties to end the fighting.
What needs to be done, particularly during this session, is one, for the parties to go on into the implementation of the matrix that would lead them into the disengagement of troops and fully implement the cessation of hostilities.
Negotiators are also discussing the shape of a proposed transitional government that may include both main rivals in the conflict, President Salva Kiir and his former vice president Riek Machar. Meantime, new fighting erupted in the past week around Upper Nile State, in areas near Malakal Town, as well as in Renk County, which is close to several key oil fields. Philip Aguer, the spokesman for South Sudan's army, says forces loyal to Machar have been responsible for the violence.
It is the SPLA that have been in specific locations and respecting and committing itself to the ceasefire and cessation of hostilities. Riek Machar forces have been fighting all along.
The SPLA says it is now fully in control of Renk. A spokesman for opposition forces, Luol Ruai Kuang, told VOA that rebel forces have only responded in defense to attacks from government troops. He accused the SPLA of trying to retake territory to gain leverage in the talks.
The government troops made a deliberate attempt to attack our positions with the view of strengthening their negotiation position.
Ambassador Mesfin says the conflict is political at heart and that gaining territory will not help either side.
Whether this party or that party gains more ground of control on the ground, this would mean nothing, practically nothing, because the guns will not solve this political problem.
Mesfin says the humanitarian situation in South Sudan adds to the urgency of quickly reaching a lasting deal. The United Nations says nearly 1.5 million people have been displaced since fighting broke out in December last year, amid warnings that parts of the country are facing an emergency food situation. Gabe Joslo, VOA News, Nairobi.
A regional political analyst says the peace talks, which reopened yesterday in Bahir Dar, Ethiopia, without the leader of the political parties forum, Lam Akol, are not inclusive and therefore reduce the chances of yielding an accepted agreement. Dismas Kunda says locking out Lam is turning a blind eye to a wealth of experience and knowledge that could be critical for reaching a peaceful settlement. VOA fellow Lucy Pony reports from Washington.
Dismas Nkunda is a Kampala-based human rights activist and political commentator on Africa. He says the talks should be inclusive. Dr. Lamakol and three other political leaders were barred from traveling to Ethiopia for the talks last week by security officers in Juba following an invitation by IGAD to take part in the talks. Nkunda says Akol is a valuable resource.
The presence of Lamakol, who has been a long-standing Secretary General of SPLM, has certainly a bearing on the future of the negotiation of what they need in the new formation of the government. I would think that the presence of both the delegation of President Salva Kiir, the delegation of Riek Machar, and the, including Lamakol, certainly would have given it a better national outlook than having only two sections of the powerful group speaking to themselves. And I would think that the absence of Lamakol and his group certainly will have a great impact on the outcome of the document that we'll be hoping for.
Nkunda says having all stakeholders participate in the talks would likely ensure a more even representation of different ethnic groups in the final agreement. Just days before the talks resumed on Monday, government and opposition forces clashed in parts of Upper Nile State. Nkunda says the sporadic fighting is tactical and intended to give more weight to either side at the negotiating table. He says unless an agreement is reached quickly, the pattern of clashes on the ground will continue.
When there are two belligerent forces fighting against each other in areas where they are tending towards the negotiating peace, they end up upping up the ante by fighting, by trying to get advantage, to create the advantage that we are more powerful than you are. So to that extent, I think it was intentional, deliberate, so that either party can get to the negotiation table and be able to assert that, you know, I have captured this added on more territory. And in particular, the territory they are fighting for, the one near Malkal, that is the heart of South Sudan, where all the oil is. And therefore, having access to that gives the other party more advantage.
The regional body, IGAD, which is mediating the talks, has suggested a proposal for an interim government whereby the opposition would appoint a prime minister who would be approved by the president. After the election in 2 years' time, the prime minister would not be eligible to be a candidate for the elections in 2 years' time. The government of South Sudan unanimously agreed to the proposal, but other stakeholders, including the opposition, were against it.
I do think a different arrangement probably would have been better. I'm not in the negotiations, but if, for example, they had created the position of a president and vice president, like two.
Nkunda calls on IGAD and the international community to increase pressure on the two parties to reach a deal and bring peace to the tens of thousands of South Sudanese suffering the effects of the war. For VOA News, I'm Lucy Pony.
State authorities and aid agencies in Warab say more than 36,000 people have been displaced from their homes by flash floods in recent days. They say some of the victims are suffering from malaria and other waterborne diseases, as well as hunger. Officials are asking humanitarian agencies for help. For VOA News, Santino Monud Ayuel reports from the state capital, Kwajok.
The state's official says flooding caused by heavy rains and overflowing rivers have uprooted an estimated 6,000 households from their villages. The figure each hold as about 6 people. Benjamin Yandit, World Director of the South Sudan Relief and Rehabilitation Commission in Warab State, says several entire villages have been washed away.
We have two counties where we have their figures. Toin South, where the flood has affected 3,000 households. Toin North, which are already witnessed 3,126 households.
Toin South County Commissioner William Walmayom says the floods have also destroyed dozens of markets and many crops. He says because livestock and crops have been washed away in the flood waters, people are not able to feed themselves. Mayom says many are also suffering from dehydration due to lack of clean drinking water. And as if that weren't enough, Mayom says some displaced people have been bitten by snakes and crocodiles.
All the crops that were cultivated this year is completely damaged by the flooding. They also reported waterborne diseases or affected all the victims. They also reported the other wild animals, especially snakes, causing casualties. Their livestock are also reported to be displaced by the water.
Thousands of displaced villages have no access to food, medicine, or clean drinking water. Mayom says team led by World Vision and South Sudan Relief and Rehabilitation Commission are assessing whether the affected villages have additional needs. Aid officials says they have distributed food items to some victims in Tony South County, but no temporary shelters have been set up so far in Tony North. No relief has been distributed. Warab Agriculture Minister Majong Bolku says the state government did issue early warnings to farmers about the dangers of setting on low-lying areas.
Early cultivation always is the only way that we avoid the crops damage. And it has proved to us this year when we distributed some of the seeds that we have in the first week of April, and then those who cultivated on the 15th of April, they have harvested. Now, those who cultivated in end of July, they didn't harvest anything.
Irene Mbiki works for the Italian's charity Collaborations Comitato Medica in Tony South County, says her agency is providing assistance, but the sheer number of displaced villages is overwhelming.
Several number of people have been displaced and are on the roadside. Desperately, there is no food, there is no clothes. They don't have even a mosquito net. We realize so many people have malaria in the community, but they have not been able to access services because even our own facilities are flooded.
Warab State Relief and Rehabilitation Commission Director Benjamin Yanditwol is warning members of local organization they had better not steal any relief supplies meant for their flood victims.
If they are the sons of the president, they are the sons of the governors, they must answer the rule of law, and we will announce and override you because we are fed up. And we are not only fed up, we are sick. Because if our brothers are killing their own mothers, their sisters, by swallowing what is for the suffering, and then they make themselves rich, very proud, and they ride in the town, we are going to do what we are supposed to do.
Heavy rains are expected to continue in October and November. The states and local officials are calling on national government and UN agencies to help rescue the displaced villages. Unfortunately, flash flooding happens all too often in the county. Last year, officials says more than 70% of their population was affected by flash floods. For BOA News, I'm Santino Manuta Yuelin Kwajok, Warab State.
You are listening to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Coming up, the government of South Sudan is positioning itself to be the primary recipient of Global Fund money to fight diseases like malaria and HIV/AIDS. That story is coming up shortly.
What do you think? People speak out on important questions. The question today:
what is your favorite meal to cook?
I eat combo. Something with combo, anyway. As a tiny man like me, it's my favorite. And the reason is I enjoy it. I don't like fatty, I don't like oily foods and the rest. I just enjoy it. That's why I go for it all the time.
I like bamiyan beef. I just feel good eating it, and I love cooking it. It's easy and tasty.
Well, I don't cook, but I love beans. That's my favorite. Since high school, that's what we've been eating, and I'm quite used to it.
I like fish. I cook it in many ways. I can just chop it. I can just make it fried as a combo. We cook it with also with groundnuts. Yeah.
What do you think? A daily discussion of important questions from VOA.
You are listening to South Sudan in Focus. It's time for our Tuesday's health segment. Today we are talking about Global Fund money in South Sudan. South Sudan's government is trying to become a recipient of the Global Fund for fighting tuberculosis, HIV/AIDS, and malaria. As a result, South Sudan's health ministry is launching a financial management training initiative for its staff. As Waki Simon Wudu reports for VOA from Juba, if all goes as planned, it will mark the first time the government directly receives the funds.
For the past few years, the United Nations Development Programme, or UNDP, and Population Services International, or PSI, have been the principal recipients of these funds worth several million dollars. But now that is changing. Today, the Minister of Health launched a training program aimed at helping the government meet the requirements to qualify as the principal recipient of Global Fund money. The Global Fund has played a critical role in financing South Sudan's health sector. Dr. Lul Riek, Director General for External Coordination of South Sudan's Health Ministry, says the funds help provide drugs for patients suffering from tuberculosis, HIV/AIDS, and malaria. Riek says the government will work closely with the UNDP and PSI to distribute the Global Fund money.
This is the launching the joint partnership, Global Fund, Geneva-based, to build the financial capacity of the institutions that are managing the Global Fund's investment.
Riek says right now his ministry does not have the ability to manage the funds. It simply does not have enough trained personnel or facilities to become the principal recipient of Global Fund money. He says he hopes to change that with the training.
That the capacity needs to be built institutionally and also train people, coach them, mentor them. Once these institutions are being built, now this money can be managed directly by the Minister of Health.
UNDP Country Director for South Sudan, Balas Hovath, says becoming the main recipient and manager of the Global Fund means South Sudan's health ministry will be strengthening its institutional capacity to deliver basic services, including health care.
This initiative is a significant milestone in devising an orderly and planned transition of the PR role to the Ministry of Health.
The Juba-based Ecobank is funding the health ministry's efforts to train its staff on Global Fund management. Global Fund portfolio manager for the Middle East and North Africa, Marion Hatchman, says since 2004, $290 million have been allocated to South Sudan to fight malaria, HIV/AIDS, and tuberculosis. She says $250 million has already been used to fight diseases. She says Global Fund is allocating $135 million to South Sudan for the next 2 years. For VOA News, I am Wake Simon Wudu in Juba.
The United Nations Children's Fund, or UNICEF, is repeating a warning that tens of thousands of South Sudanese children under the age of 5 could die of hunger this year. A spokeswoman for UNICEF says even though the food security situation in South Sudan is showing some improvement, much more needs to be done to prevent a humanitarian tragedy in the country. For VOA News, Philip Thorn Aleu reports from Juba.
Catherine Donovan, UNICEF Communication Officer in Juba, says a report released today called the Integrated Food Security Phase Classification, or IPC, shows how bad the situation is for children in South Sudan.
There are tens of thousands of children who are at great risk of disease, even death, due to a lack of proper nutrition, which is really connected to the overall situation in the country, which is very, very poor right now.
The IPC classifies the severity and magnitude of food insecurity in countries around the world. Donovan says at least 50,000 children in South Sudan could die by the end of the year if they are not rich with life-saving food. UNICEF says children living in conflict-affected areas of South Sudan and children who have been displaced by more than 9 months of fighting are especially at the risk of malnutrition. Citing the IPC report, Donovan says displaced children suffer disproportionately more from hunger than adults. Children make up the majority of displaced in South Sudan, UNICEF says. Donovan says food security has improved slightly in South Sudan in recent weeks, but that does not mean the children are out of danger.
So what we're really concerned about in terms of the future is January, February, when the food stocks run out, and then again, perhaps there's more conflict on the ground, there's more movement. All of this will have a tremendous effect on the state of children in South Sudan.
Donovan says UNICEF is scaling up its nutrition response to try to avoid a tragedy in South Sudan.
So UNICEF is working very hard to put social mobilizers on the ground in communities all over South Sudan so that we can start taking children who are sick into the therapeutic feeding centers before they get to a really bad level. And to do what we're aiming to do is to reach 65,000 children by the end of the year.
Donovan is calling on the international community to step up and fill the funding gap so that aid agencies can get help to the children of South Sudan.
Do we have the resources to do that? I would say that we need a lot of support to be able to get to a place where we can service every last child, but that's just until the end of the year.
Donovan says UNICEF is urgently seeking an additional $25 million to be able to provide food to hungry children in South Sudan and to pre-position life-saving supplies for use during the coming dry season, which usually starts in January and runs through April. If the money does not materialize, the suffering of the South Sudanese children will continue and could get much worse, she says. For VOA News, I am Peloton Aleu in Juba.
South Sudanese children, like many other children across the continent, must also live with abnormal high rates of violence. African children face disproportionately high levels of violence, according to a new report by African Child Policy Forum. The study calls for more coordinated action to prevent violence against children. Mata Vonderwolf reports from Addis Ababa.
The new report, released Thursday, says African children are subjected to extremely high levels of emotional, physical, and sexual abuse, and current laws and policies have not been able to tackle this issue. African Child Policy Forum Executive Director Teofana Nikiema says a coordinated response is needed.
There has not been a lot of focus on the prevention side when it comes to child protection. And therefore, this is why we are, you know, advocating for countries to reinforce the child protection system approach. And the system approach called for looking at the prevention, taking measures for prevention, but also having a coordinated response in terms of protection, and that coordinated response including government, communities, families, I mean all stakeholders.
The report is a combination of 75 studies and surveys undertaken in Ethiopia, Kenya, Malawi, Mali, Morocco, Uganda, Zambia, and Zimbabwe. The findings show that in some countries, such as Mali and Zambia, children receive the majority of physical punishment from family members. But in others, such as Togo and Sierra Leone, most of the violence comes from teachers and classmates. Sexual violence against girls was found to be especially high almost everywhere, at home, in the wider community, and at schools. Girls in conflict zones are even more vulnerable to sexual abuse and rape. Nikiema says the report shows there is increasing sexual exploitation of children.
Sexual tourism is one of them. This is done by through different ways, through the internet or through other means, and we certainly need to government to pay much more attention on sexual abuse and sexual exploitation, or even children being trafficked outside of countries for sexual purposes.
Countries such as Kenya, Ethiopia, Senegal, Morocco, and South Africa are becoming new hotspots for child sex tourism, according to the study. Abuse against children affects their emotional health and well-being and can have a negative impact on their development and prospects for a long life. Nigyema believes that the definition of violence should be clearer so that awareness can be raised in communities.
Because sometimes a children will be punished for discipline, but there is a fine line between discipline and violence. So even the punishment is a violence against the child because it can have a psychological effect, a mental effect of the child. So therefore, you know, we should raise the awareness of the communities, of the stakeholders, so that they understand exactly what is violence.
The study was done in cooperation with the African Union. The report will be presented Friday to the AU Commission with the recommendation to reinforce policies that focus on preventing violence against African children. Marta van der Wolf for VOA News, Addis Ababa.
Residents of Jonglé say they are grateful for the repair of a 120 kilometers road from Bor to Mangala in central Equatorial State, saying it will lower transportation costs, which have been on the rise for over the past few months. The Korean contingency of the United Nations mission in South Sudan is repairing the road with money from the Korean government. For VOA News, Jacob Achiek reports from Juba.
Last year, commuters paid 100 South Sudanese pounds to travel from Bor to Juba by bus. But in the last 9 months, bus owners have increased their fare to 150 South Sudanese pounds, saying the road has become nearly impassable due to all the fuel caused by heavy rain. Bor town resident Guy James Chot said traveling to Juba by bus has become very expensive.
When I try to compare right now and 2008 the price was less a bit down because the road was a bit okay, but now the price has raised up due to the roughness of the road.
Earlier this month, the military engineering unit of the Korean Contingency of the United Nations Mission in South Sudan signed a memorandum of understanding with the Jonglei State government to repair the road. John Amor Kwal, Jonglei State Physical Infrastructure Minister, said he and another Bor resident are extremely grateful to the Koreans, seeing the state government cannot afford to pick the roads.
Building roads is very costly. Making 1 meter up to Tamagit can go to 1 million and something. From here to Juba is 197 kilometers. So the Koreans are doing 125 from here to Mangala. And then the other company will take it from Mangala to Juba.
UNMISS State Coordinator Ethel DeWitt said along with ensuring the safety of South Sudanese civilians, the peacekeeping force is committed to improve the country infrastructure so that goods and services can be delivered to people in need.
This road is the means by which produce is carried between markets. It is the way that messages and messengers travel between towns. It is the road that takes loved ones to and from their family. Prices get higher as produce takes longer to travel. People get poorer as a result. Messengers travel less, meaning we start talking to each other less, and miscommunications results in strife and conflict.
Motorist Mangor Kuradier said due to all the pothole on the Bor Mangala road, people like him now spend more hours on road, which means they are spending more money on fuel. He said that why this is such an important project.
We are going to be saved. So if Korea have started the work like that, it will be good. Now the price is 150. And if the road is good, the price is 50 pounds. Because what we need is just to transport our people.
Deputy Governor Baba Medan Konyi said Jonglei State authorities will ensure the safety of Korean peacekeepers while they repair the road. This is not the first infrastructure project in South Sudan for the Korean peacekeepers. They completed construction of 17-kilometer dikes along the White Nile River last month. For BOA News, I'm Jacob Achek in Juba.
And that report by our colleague Jacob Achek in Juba brings us to the end of this show for this Tuesday. We'll leave you with the song God Bless New York by Emmanuel Kembe.
New York, so nice they had to name it twice. That whoever was involved had to crash planes twice. One in the North Tower, the other on the South. Kill the rail heroes before they can make it out. They saved other folks' lives and jeopardized their own lives. God bless the city that don't sleep. God forgive the enemy for their envy, hatred, and jealousy. Couldn't believe what I saw happen in New York, September 11th.
Did you see the news report?
We have been listening to Emmanuel Kembe with that song, God Bless New York. I'm John Tanza in Washington. Thanks for listening. We are glad you could join us. Please tune in again tomorrow evening for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Did you hear?